Trees don't care about us. That's what I tell people all the time. Nature doesn't care about you. Nature would just as soon sting you, kill you, eat you, and lay its eggs in your decomposing remains. That's what nature wants to do with you.
Hey there. Welcome to the Stormwater World Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to a new episode of the Stormwater World Podcast. Super excited today. We're going to go in a little different direction, I feel like, but maybe not. It's still stormwater. Maybe it's a little outside of what you normally think for stormwater. It sure took me aback a little bit when I first saw John sign up for the podcast, but really excited to have him here. We had a really interesting pre-call, and I think you're really going to enjoy what John has to offer in terms, not only in stormwater, but just in our environment, how we look at trees in general. But let me go ahead and introduce John Palmer. He's a consultant and ISA board certified master arborist out of Cleveland, Ohio. John, thank you so much for being on the pod.
Thank you very much, Ty. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit. Okay, so I think we need to know who you are, why you would want to be on a stormwater podcast, and then we'll get into the real guts of everything. What do you think?
That's fine. As I mentioned before, I went through the proverbial midlife crisis because I lost my career at 40. And I'm like, oh, crap, what am I going to do now? And I was desperate. So I was in radio, which is why I have a nice RE20 microphone here. And I was desperate. So I started a landscaping business. And so I was desperate, and I figured any idiot could mow lawns. My apologies to the landscaping industry, but I realized I was eminently qualified. So there I went. After a few years into that, I thought, man, I don't want to be shoveling mulch when I'm 60. And in trying to solve a problem for one of my clients, I had to do some research on trees. And I came across a word that I'd never seen before. And in trying to figure out what allelopathy was, I came across the International Society of Arboriculture. And through that, I realized, oh, hey, look, they actually provide a program where you could be an ISA certified arborist. And I literally thought to myself, I bet certified arborists make more than landscapers. So I began to pursue that. And that just rekindled a love of science and me and appreciation for nature more than just mowing lawns and shoveling mulch. And so I became a certified arborist about 12 years ago. And because I had a communications background, all of a sudden people knew me that I could talk. You'll be thoroughly bored by the end of this because that's all I do. But I started speaking to people about trees, about landscapes, about different things like that. I started writing. And as I pursued into that, then I realized, hey, there were conferences where people spoke about trees and people were very kind and complimentary about most of the things that I was talking about because I'm a communicator. I'm not going to shy away from that. And so I continued to pursue that in my career. And then I was approached by someone about a company about teaching courses about trees, but it wasn't to tree people. Primarily, it was tree people and landscape architects and engineers and architects and forestry people. And I thought, this is interesting. So I actually developed course curricula to be able to give this working for this company and just doing periodic lectures for them in person. It started out. And over the past few years, it's developed more into me taking those similar courses and promoting them myself. And now I get to talk trees and tree science and all the things that go with it. But it's more than just trees because trees have an integral relationship between soils and hydrology, how water moves through soils, and stormwater management. And then as I started teaching these courses and I was getting feedback from civil engineers and stormwater engineers going, I never knew, I never understood. This helps so much because I didn't understand what tree people needed and the relationship here. And so getting all that positive feedback was obviously exciting for me. So now I get the opportunity to speak and to lecture and to train people about the incredible importance of trees as it relates to things like stormwater management and what municipalities have to deal with. I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm less than 3 miles from the southern shore of Lake Erie, 6 quadrillion gallons of water. And what happens to all the municipalities that are along the lake shore? 150 years ago, when people started putting stormwater measures in, all of it, they just dumped it in the lake and Lake Erie became like a gigantic cesspool. And so all of a sudden, and obviously that was a huge issue. So in the 60s, when occasionally rivers would burn because of all the crap that was in it and all this pollutants was being dumped into places like Lake Erie, and then the EPA kind of came out of that Now all of a sudden, stormwater management was a really important issue. So in my area, there's a lot of CSOs, combined sewer overflows. So where you got storm and sewage together, when you get a big stormwater event, a peak flow event, all of a sudden you're dumping all this sewage into a huge waterway. So that's become, that relationship is crucial. And I just spent, I have no social life. I just read research studies and papers and go to conferences and just collect all this information. And I don't do any of the research. I'm just the storyteller. So that's what I spent the last 6-7 years doing, is just telling the story.
Let's start at the beginning then. Let's start the story at the beginning, and let's just talk about the value of trees in general. And then let's work it into that relationship with stormwater for everybody.
When people think about a tree person or an arborist, they think, well, yeah, he's a tree hugger. She's a tree hugger. Yeah, okay, fine. I am. But it's not just because, it's just because they make me feel good. The benefits of trees have actually been qualified and quantified, measured and presented everywhere and printed in the research. So the trees will benefit us from a human level. We heal faster. We're calmer. Symptoms of ADD and ADHD are actually reduced among trees. For people that live around trees, there's a reduction in what they call non-accidental mortality. And the bigger the tree is, that relationship is, if I can do my fingers right here, there's a correlation between that. So many things like that. But when it comes to the practical, and when you're talking stormwater, trees remove pollutants from water. They actually increase infiltration into soils. Tree roots actually do that. So for people that are like, ah, oh, those damn tree roots are getting in my blah, 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 guess what? That's actually helping water infiltrate into soil. That's been measured and quantified. So trees can pull an amazing amount of water out of saturated soils. There are some estimates that a large tree can pull 100, maybe more, 100 gallons of water a day out of saturated soils. So trees are actually a stormwater control measure. They are a stormwater utility. So understanding the benefits, again, I can go on and on about this, but it's been measured, it's been seen, and I'm just trying to bridge the gap between, say, the tree community and, say, the construction and the build design industry.
Let's talk about then, I mean, there's different aspects of the, you know, trees in our environment, in our the stormwater environment. I think, so from an erosion control standpoint, stream bank stabilization, and just not allowing that erosion to happen because by maintaining and not getting rid of all the trees, that's one thing. If you could talk about that, if you like.
Sure. Then, real quickly, we talked about this before, is the reason that trees do that is for erosion control is because tree roots grow differently than the way most people think. I actually have a small webinar that's called The Truth About Trees. Almost all you've heard is wrong. So when you take a look at trees, people imagine, and many people still do, that tree roots have a taproot, like a carrot-like taproot that goes down. And that's just actually demonstrably false. Mature trees do not have deep roots. Most tree roots are in the top 18 inches of soil. And I talked earlier about this. If you want to know a perfect picture of what a tree, its entire architecture looks like, just imagine a wine glass on a dinner plate. You have canopy, trunk, and roots. Roots do not just stop at the edge of the drip line or the canopy. They can actually extend 2 to 3 times the diameter. And they don't grow deep. The primary reason for that is tree roots actually absorb oxygen. So the tree leaves, and tree roots are the exact opposite. Tree leaves take in carbon dioxide and they give off oxygen and water vapor. Tree roots actually absorb oxygen from between the soil particles. But for those soil scientists out there, between the peds, between the clumps and the clods of soil, and they give off carbon dioxide. So that dynamic, the deeper you go in the soil profile, the less oxygen there is. So oftentimes in a construction environment, people think we can cut all around these roots around the tree because we got to put stuff in. They've got that deep tap root. They'll be just fine. And that's factually incorrect. The architecture of a tree is a wine glass on a dinner plate. So just use that to reshape people's viewpoint of what we're doing, protecting the root system. Since it's shallow, you think maybe we could do damage with construction equipment and hardscapes and whatever, drainage lines, sewer lines. Yes, you can do tremendous damage to trees. And if we really value our trees, and if we want to continue with increasing the tree canopy, which everybody talks about that, then it's important to understand the actual architecture of tree roots. So that's why they benefit in a riparian zone. Stream side is because the roots are all shallow. They're not deep. And that's how they stabilize a hillside.
So then the next step then, wait, let me back up. Is your webinar available online?
It is, but it's, I only do webinars for continuing education credits. So engineers
can actually... it's a webinar you do. I see. Okay, that's okay. So it's for education. Oh, yeah, you know what? But if you give me the link, we'll put it in the show notes. So those, because there's plenty of, I like to think that there's some, there's people that need some PEs, and we're not just talking to ourselves. Hopefully there's people listening. They may need some PDHs, and they can go check it out if they like to. So we'll put that in the show notes. And then I love that visual, by the way. The wine glass on a plate is very telling. But then, so if we're going to integrate into our urban landscape, because there's no way getting around it, we're not going to, we're not pouring less concrete these days. We're going to continue to pour more and more concrete. In your opinion, or what have you found, or what do you see? Like, how do we do it and not kill the trees? Because I think we talked pre-call about how sad most of the trees, you go walk down a little, a little city, downtown area, and you see these little trees and they're in the grates and they just look, they're very stunted. They just, they don't always look healthy. Every now and then you see some pretty ones. They're not going to get any bigger because obviously they're stunted. So that, what are your thoughts on that? How do we do it better?
If we begin to understand what actually trees need in their root system. Okay. So if the tree roots grow wide, we can't put them in a 3x3 foot pit because once they might look fine the first year or the second year, but as the trees are trying to penetrate outside of that little box or that teacup, it's not going to happen. So the interesting thing about trees is I could take three trees that are all the same species, same size, and put them in three different soil volumes, 100 cubic feet, 300 cubic feet, 1,000 cubic feet, whatever it is. Those three trees will grow to three different sizes because trees have a genetic blueprint that they are going to grow according to whether we like it or not. Trees don't care about us. That's what I tell people all the time. Nature doesn't care about you. Nature would just as soon sting you, kill you, eat you, and lay its eggs in your decomposing remains. That's what nature wants to do with you. Sorry to be
That's a nice. There's a good sound clip. That's going on the teaser, everybody. That's the sound clip for the teaser.
It's a little indelicate. My apologies, but it's true. So trees don't care. If they say, oh, we're going to put trees in this or that, the tree's like, I don't care. I need to grow this way. And if you do this, so you continue to constrict trees. This is why the relationship between soil volume and trees is crucial. And again, it's about soil volume. It's not about soil quality, quote unquote. I would rather have 1,000 cubic feet of crappy soil as opposed to 100 cubic feet of good soil. And soil structure is crucial. Now, I'm not talking about brownfield pollutants, that kind of stuff, but quote unquote, what people see as crappy soil. I can amend soils to make it better. I can't increase, if I got a 100 cubic feet of space in a little box, I can't increase that size. So the additional value from a stormwater management standpoint is if I have a larger, more soil for tree roots to grow in, guess what? That's more soil to capture more runoff. And now you have that soil that can actually, the soil and what happens with soils and the remediation of pollutants and heavy metals and things like that, nutrients, the more soil we have, the more that actually happens below ground. So that's why, again, open tree spaces, underground support system, whether it's underneath boxes or structural cells, things like that, and especially in an urban environment, now we have more soil for the roots to grow in and more soil for water to actually drain into and then stay there, which allow it, it's a reservoir for the trees. So when the tree, when in a dry season, you get a little rainfall, now you've got 1,000 or 3,000 cubic feet of soil below ground for the tree roots to be able to pull moisture from when they start to dry out. So the relationship is so important there, and it's so beneficial.
That's interesting. This is a weird question. I may show my ignorance. I've heard them I do that every episode, just so you know. I show my ignorance. But so I'm thinking from like a city planning standpoint, like could you technically, so what you're saying, we've got the concrete layer that we're all walking on that we need. And you're saying, so if we increase the amount of soil, dirt, whatever, underneath that layer to give the tree the proper room to expand and thrive and be healthy, could we actually calculate? I'm just thinking, if I could say, oh, well, street line, I want these trees to only be 15 foot tall or something arbitrary. I want them to be roughly be about 15 foot tall. Because then if they branch out because of the type of tree I'm thinking maintenance and stuff and overarching on the street, what am I going to, if I can control the height of the tree, is that fair? Is that possible? Can I do that? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Like in all the, you know what I'm saying? Like, am I crazy? Cause I understand what you're saying, right? If we increase the soil underneath, then we can get a healthy tree, but then can I also by restricting that to a certain degree. Can I guess? Can I get a good idea of what I'm going to get on the top?
Yeah. Have you ever tried to control nature?
We're human beings. We do it. We try to do it every day. What are you talking about?
Every day.
Nature wins. You cannot. So, you know, what you're trying to do is tell nature what to do. And it's so you might be able to reduce the size of the tree, but you're probably going to reduce the health and the vigor of the tree and increase the stress on the tree. So it's probably a much better idea. Tree selection. If you got overhead wires that are 18 feet above there, probably only want to plant a tree that's going to be 15 feet tall at maturity. So I would rather plant a tree, grow. Species selection is crucial with that.
Okay. And all right.
So that's probably the most important thing, the easiest thing, because then you don't have to worry about maintenance. You don't have to worry about the health of the tree. Let the tree do what it does naturally. Leave it alone. I would rather plant a tree and leave it alone. And then you don't have to spend continued money on maintenance. If we give it the right environment, I think that's what we can see more of.
Are there any organizations that you're aware of or that you've been working with that you feel like are on the right track or fighting this fight with you? Surely you're not the lone wolf in the stormwater world trying to.
No, I'm not. I have the biggest mouth in this particular space, I think. And that's it. No, there's a lot of people out there. There are companies that are trying to learn what can we do. The grower industry, they're trying to find hybrids and cultivars that actually they can grow. I'm sure you've seen them. You go someplace and you realize there's not much space. So they plant a tree that's 18 inches wide. It's just a stick that goes straight up. That's a cultivar that somebody figured out. If you need a skinny tree, you can plant that. I'm like, okay, whatever. So there's lots of that. So the grower side is doing it. The engineering side is trying to do it as well, because they're looking at things like, how can we reduce total suspended solids in our runoff? How can we process more? So the old paradigm was essentially we want to capture as much stormwater and runoff as we can, get it offsite as quickly as possible. So that's why we have these huge catchment systems. That was effective, but not maybe very efficient. So now we have the localized, the word's escaping me. We have the bioswales, the retention basins, whatever people call them, where they're at, trying to keep whatever they're trying to keep. There's seven names around the world and I forget. But so we're trying to capture some of that runoff and keep it in a particular area. And trees actually help with that. Trees reduce the amount of runoff. Trees have trees intercept rainfall. So that's actually been measured. So I call it the pinball effect. So when a raindrop hits the top of the tree, it bounces, it splits, it runs off. And it's like a pinball, the old pinball games, until it gets that delay.
Oh, yeah, like Plinko, right? The old Plinko board.
Something like that. But so that delay can be measured. The amount of water that what they call the stem flow can be measured. The through fall that comes through the canopy can be measured. The reduction in the amount of rainfall that actually hit the precipitation that hits the ground can be measured. So there's lots of industries. There's lots of research. There's more technology. You've got structural cells in certain scenarios where people can put actually modular units underneath the sub base with that. Different types of material. You've got structural soils, which are not the be-all, end-all, but they have an advantage. Tree roots into structural soils will do better than tree roots into number 57 gravel if we add a little soil in that mix. So there's lots of things that are out there. The industries, their products that you can look at and buy. Some of them, and again, a lot of people in my industry, in the tree industry, and the research industry are looking at these technologies going, well, what's the actual effect? Because everybody's white papers look wonderful. Oh, our product does this and this. Give me a researcher who's looking at and trying to duplicate what you guys are doing. So that's important to understand. But there's a lot of technology. So I'm not the lone voice out there. I'm just the biggest voice, maybe, at least in the Midwest. And by the way, this is iced tea. This is 16-year-old age scotch.
Hey, for all you on YouTube, go check out the arborist drinking in the middle of the day.
Sometimes I need it. Believe me, sometimes I need it.
I'm jealous. I just keep mine in a cup. You can't tell what I'm drinking. So, man, okay. I'm a new engineer. Like I'm an old engineer, whatever. Let's just say I'm an engineer, even though I'm not. What would your suggestion be? It just seems like another complication to an already difficult puzzle, right? So what could you share with somebody or resources they could look at to where they could make better decisions on a design or make better decisions on? I feel like I'd like to think anyways that we try to save trees now, where we used to just cut them out. I feel like we try to work around them. We try to keep them. But obviously, that maybe is not like from what you're saying, like we keep them, but then we throw them in a little cage or we hurt them. I don't even know if we mentioned this while we've been talking. I know we had a really good visit pre-call. you come in and you got this beautiful tree and you're trying to work around it, but you end up cutting a lot of that plate, right? We go back, let's go back to that wine glass thing on the plate.
Yeah.
And we cut the plate down to a saucer. Mm-hmm. So is that something that you would say to say, hey, don't, like, let's keep that, let's be cognizant of that? Or right. What are some tips you could give out, or some actionable things that people could do, listen to this and say, oh, okay, or a resource that they could go look at to just maybe make their designs a little bit more tree health friendly?
I think one of the things that the design build industry does not realize, and probably rightfully, but engineers, architects, you have standards. You have ANSI standards, you have AASHTO standards, you have all sorts of different standards that inform what you do. Believe it or not, the tree industry actually has national standards as well. How to plant a tree. Most people would say, give me a shovel. No, it's not like that. We actually have ANSI standards. It's the ANSI A300 standards for tree care. There's actually 10 volumes of that. All of them are based on BMPs. So there are best management practices that correspond to that. So whether it's planting trees or pruning trees, fertilizing trees, watering trees, we have all these standards that most industries outside of the tree industry don't. And this is where some of this is self-inflicted. Oh, you're a tree hugger. And yes, we love trees. But guess what? I have measurable benefits that can be. So from a standpoint of the urban heat island effect, here's what trees can do about stormwater mitigation. That stuff has all been measured. And I don't know that I can necessarily give you resources. There's so many out there that I couldn't pick them out of my brain right off the top of my head. But there are tremendous amounts. But just to know, for my engineer friends, there are standards for tree care and what we do. And here's one in particular. So if you don't cut the roots on a tree, but what happens if you compact the soil around a tree's root zone in that plate area that you were talking about? It's problematic. And here's why. Because of the bulk density of the soil. There's actually been studies that have shown that there is a root limiting bulk density. Different types of soils compact in different ways, sand versus clay, things like that. From an engineering standpoint, you compact things to Proctor density. So there's a certain Proctor density. A very common Proctor density is 95% Proctor density. I can tell you from the research about tree roots is that once you get to about 80% Proctor density, roots can no longer penetrate into that soil or survive in that particular soil. Tree roots need space between the soil particles. If you go into nature, 50% of what you're walking on in an undisturbed area is space for either air or water and root penetration. So that's the structure of soil. So it's important for engineers to understand Proctor density. Now, I want an engineer who's building a bridge or a building to make sure your compaction, you nail the compaction, okay? I don't want to drive across a bridge where you were just like, that looks good. Okay, what the hell? No, I don't want that. I want engineers to do what's right. But just know that whatever you're doing is the antithesis of what tree roots need. So you can have a building that's done properly if the surrounding soil is all compacted or sub-base material, whatever it is, compacted to 95% Proctor density, and then you plant $30,000 landscaping with a bunch of trees in it. I can tell you that those trees are going to be dead and gone in 3 to 5 years because they won't be able to penetrate outward. When the tree gets bigger, it needs a bigger root system. Trees develop a balance between canopy and root system. And again, it's the wine glass on the dinner plate. So if engineers understood what trees need a little bit more, we could make better decisions. And I don't think it's going to overly complicate things. It will complicate just a little bit. But if ultimately our goal is to think, we have to think 10, 20, 50 years down the road, because in theory, most trees should live that long. And if we want them as an asset. And so the benefits of trees are legion. They're legendary. I could spend the next hour talking about nothing but the benefits of trees for us in the environment, how they help us process stormwater. So trees are a tremendous asset. I know municipalities that after finding out the benefits of tree canopy were going to, they actually took money out of the water and sewer district and said, no, we're going to plant trees with this because we realize what this is going to mean to us in 10 and 20 years down the road with stormwater mitigation and making sure that the EPA still likes them after all this time.
Yeah. What is the, so, I mean, there's so many sound bites of this.
Yeah. I try. I
mean, like, you're going to get yourself canceled from stormwater or for the, I'm kidding. We're on episode 22. Trust me, if we haven't got canceled yet, we're probably not going to. Okay. So here's another question then. What can I do to fix one? So let's say I've got a tree. I guess there's only so much you can do if the box is small, right? But yeah. I don't know. What, But I feel like, I don't know. Is there any way to fix that? Is there a way to fix the compaction issue? Is there a way to at least have some sort of healthy? I would think it's worse to tear it out and start over, right? Or if they die, that sucks. Because can I bring one back to life? What's the answer to the ones?
It's more in my mind and more people's minds. It's more important to save a large tree than it is to plant new trees. If it's a good species and the structure of it and the health is good, because you're already getting large benefits. You plant a small tree, you get small benefits. When you plant a new tree, it's not a tree in my mind. It's a shrub on a stick. And that's the benefits that we're getting from it. So this is why we want large trees, which is why on a construction site, we don't want to damage them. So we've all seen a construction site where you see the orange snow fence around the tree. This is a tree protection zone. There are some formulas to figure that out. But if you think about it, if a tree's root system is 2 to 3 times the canopy, and then you've got a snow fence that's 20 feet away from the tree and the tree's canopy is 80 feet wide, are you really protecting the tree roots? And the answer to that question is no, you're not. And in addition, all the equipment and all the traffic that happens over it, you compact the soil. So in addition to possibly damaging the root system, because the root system is shallow, you're also compacting the soil around the root system. So that I have a real problem with the tree protection zone that my industry is even talks about, and they give you a formula, because it's not. Now, can you damage some tree roots and have the tree be okay? Yes, but it's like anything. The more you do, the more damage you do, the more, you know, a possible problems that is. So this is where, when we design our site, the construction sites, and we map out where people are going to be. If you want to save a tree, you need to extend out. You can't have any construction essentially underneath the canopy. Which I know the whole construction industry just went, oh my God, not that. But if you're really going to save the tree, you don't have a choice. You have to work around it. Now, can you remediate problems with trees after the fact? Sometimes depends on the amount of damage. It depends on how long the damage has been there. Can you use something like an air knife or an air spade? I don't know if you're familiar with those. Just imagine a pressure washer with air instead of water.
Okay.
You can actually blow out and you can loosen the soil. You can decompact the soil. Okay. One of the things you can do in a construction site, if you've got a large tree and want to protect the root zone, put down 10 inches of wood chips over the entire root system, then drive your equipment across it. Like the mats and things that people buy, the geotextile things to help, those are okay. It's probably cheaper to just call an arborist friend with a chipper truck and come out and dump them there and leave 10 inches, because that'll actually help spread out the load and you'll do less compaction of the soil, less damage to the roots. So you can still get around the tree. But I think that tree protection zone with the orange snow fence, that's a false sense of security. It allows somebody to check a box, but it's not really protecting the tree at all. And then when the tree declines and dies in 3 or 5 years, then people blame the wrong things. Oh, it's a bug. It's a disease. It's the climate. No, it wasn't. It was the construction damage that happened. Even when people are sincere, I'm not a big fan of sincerity. I know that sounds weird. I'm not a fan of insincerity. The problem is, it's possible to be sincerely wrong. And trees don't care. When we do something bad to them, they're like, okay, fine, I'll just die. So an understanding of trees, understanding, you know, what the relationship between trees and soils and what we can do. And some of the fixes are probably easier than people think. So can you go back and remediate issues? In some cases, the bigger the tree and the more the damage, maybe the harder that's going to be. So I would prefer not to damage the trees in the first place. That's just me.
No, I get what you're saying on the sincerity thing. Results matter at the end of the day. We can have all the intentions that we want and we can try to do what we want, but either we're cleaning up stormwater and we're keeping the trees alive, or we're messing up our drinking water and we're killing trees. So it's the result, the proof's in the future pudding. Unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't show for quite a long time.
Yeah, and that's it, because trees are large and long-lived organisms. And they take a long time to grow. They oftentimes take a long time to decline. Not always, but people think, I didn't run into the tree with the backhoe, so I'm good. Just, what have you done to the surrounding soil? So that's where, when I talk to my arborist friends, no, we need to understand pedology. The little clumps and clods of soils are actually called peds, P-E-D-S, which is why the study of soils is pedology. So the more we understand that, and then we can communicate that to people, and you'll get an arborist, a certified arborist, somebody who's really trained, involved in the design process from the beginning, not just somebody who cuts trees down. There's a difference between arborist and dudes that work on trees.
Yeah.
There's a big distinction there.
Do you see that? Is that a thing? Or is that kind of a mission? Are people getting arborists involved in that on projects? Like, Okay.
And I highly recommend, again, I only recommend ISA certified arborists. ISA does not pay me to say that, the International Society of Arboriculture, of which I'm a member, but we're specially trained. We're just like engineers in the sense that we have to go and get continuing education and we have to adhere to certain standards. Adhering to the ANSI A300 standards is a part of our code of ethics with that. So yes, I was in Manhattan a couple of years ago in a new 65-story building that was going up, and they had ISA certified arborists that helped with tree selection. The landscape architecture firm had ISA certified arborists that were a part of putting that all together. Sometimes landscape architecture firms will have ISA arborists on call or whatever. So I've worked with large construction companies. I've worked with small little architects, landscape architect firms to do tree inventories. Okay, we're going to do a little project here, and the city says we have to have an ISA certified arborist. So more of that is being included into that, which is an important thing.
You're trying to make your way into the stormwater world. Can we find you in any conferences coming up? I know we talked about it in a minute, a pre-call. Have you made it your way into, are you going to come to any conferences, speak at any conferences?
I'm going to try. I've actually submitted some abstracts to some conferences. The problem is when I started looking at like conferences for stormwater, I'm like, oh my God, just there's not enough hours in the day to do this. So I'm still dealing with all that. I may actually, if they're close enough to where I'm at and if I've got the time, I may actually, or if I can combine it with other things, I may try to even just visit to some stormwater conferences, but I would love to get there, to tell this message. And there's multiple messages of this, but this is an overarching message, is it needs to happen. If we really want to increase our tree canopy, then, and there is, the federal government, as I mentioned before, is billions of dollars have allocated to reforestation initiatives. We better hope that people are doing things according to the national standards out there. Otherwise, we could have a disaster in 5 or 10 years because people do it wrong. And so that concerns me.
Oh, could you imagine?
Well, no, yeah. I don't want to go there.
Plant all those trees, use all that money, and then die in 10 years?
Yeah, the numbers for what people think is the average lifespan of an urban tree, say in an urban environment, not like in your backyard, it's scary short. It really is. Oh. And again, they decline oftentimes because I've heard it said that 80% of a tree's problems are below ground. 80%. I didn't used to believe that until I started doing consulting. And now I'm like, yep. So when I do a consult on a tree, even if it's just somebody's in their yard, I look up at the tree at about 10 seconds. And then I look down. I start looking about what's happened to the tree, what's happened around it, what kind of environment is it in, what's the hardscape, what's happened with streets and sidewalks and driveways and patios and all that kind of stuff. So most of what damages trees happens below ground. And that may be the most important message of all. So we need to really care for what happens below ground, or we're not going to get it.
So can people, how do people reach out to you, John? Will you consult? Will you fly around the country, or what's your radius or project?
I'll go wherever people would like me to come. I have the ability to do webinars, which obviously is more cost effective. But yeah, I will travel. I'll do whatever I can. My lectures are, I do them on a weekly basis. I actually have a day-long courses that I teach, of which, like I say, I'm ASLA approved. I know what the certain engineering organizations will allow for PDHs for attending the courses that I do. But yeah, I would travel. I'd be happy to talk with people, really all US based. Hey, if you foot the bill, I'll go wherever people want me to do. Now, if there's somebody in your area, it's not ego, but yeah, I'm happy to. People can get a hold of me via email. I don't even really have a website because what do? I just talk and I lecture, and that's good enough for me. So I've got my own GoToWebinar channel, so I can use that as a way to do webinars for people. And then I can email, you can just email treephd@protonmail.com, and we can do that email as well.
All right, there you go. We'll put all your links down in the show notes. We'll also put a link for everybody to the ISA board, or the ISA just in general, so you can check that out. We'll put a link to your webinar. Anything else that you want to provide, just send it to me. We'll link it in the show notes, as well as the ANSI 300 standards. I think we should link that as well. Any final thoughts? Anything else you want to share with anybody? I think you gave a nugget there at the end about they say that most dogs have people problems, and it sounds like most trees are, the problem is what, under the ground, right? It's what you can't see that's hurting that tree the most. I think we've touched on that between the compaction of the soil, as well as just chopping off its legs, chopping the plate, putting it on a saucer instead of a plate, and then just restricting it in general. So like you said, a lot of the issues are below ground. But any other final thoughts that you'd like to share with everybody before we wrap it up?
Just the bigger the trees are, the more benefits we get. to that. And so oftentimes we're replacing, cutting down big trees and replacing them with small trees. That's going to be hard to increase tree canopy and increase our benefits if we continue to do that. But again, I think just if people will just take a little bit of time to understand a little bit better about what trees actually need. My standard joke is that the internet is just an echo chamber for dumb ideas. You know, please feel free. Look, the International Society of Agriculture, the Tree Care Industry Association, TCIA, there's lots of research. The research out there is ridiculous. This is the latest Agriculture and Urban Forestry magazine from ISA, which is all research studies. So I read the nerdy research studies so you don't have to, but I can boil it down. And that's, so I'm a storyteller. So the story just needs to be told, and there can be good outcomes. Again, we're not all going to get everything we want. But the more we understand, the less damage that we can do, and ultimately a good benefit will count and will become more sustainable.
Right. And you brought up another point. I have another question, because in my mind, I'm always thinking, we got to try to come up with some sort of compromise, some sort of win. I'm pretty just like realistic. Like you were saying before, all the construction people rolling their eyes and the different things and the fight. You're up against a big fight. I think in general, we're up against a big fight in stormwater in general. And then you have an even bigger fight as being an arborist and in trying to preserve these trees. Is it possible? And if it is possible, what is the survival rate? Can you transplant these big trees? Or like, they're going to put on, like, oh, we're going to take this out. We're going to put in a shrub on a stick and it's going to grow to nothing compared to what this tree is. Can we save that tree? And does it have a survival rate? Or is it just so cost prohibitive? Like, what's the story on that?
Yeah, all of the above. Excuse me. In fact, I think there is a company in Texas that actually moves large trees, and you can do that. I know there are certain municipalities. If I recall, I believe Boston has some things. If the tree's over a certain size, you either have to change the footprint of your plan or move the tree. And it is mostly cost prohibitive. So yes, you can transplant trees, but you can't take a little root ball out of a big tree. So if you can actually go online, you can find videos of large tree movers and see if they put them on flatbeds.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, it's huge.
They're monstrous, but the root ball, quote unquote, is only 3 or 4 feet deep, but it's 25, 30 feet wide. So it is cost prohibitive for most people, but I remember a story that they transplanted it was hundreds or maybe 1,000-year-old big, huge tree in Israel. They actually dug, because they're going to put a highway through. So they actually dug the tree out and moved it and replanted it. And the transplant rate, if done properly, is similar to the transplant rate of a small tree, if people know what they're doing. But there's probably only a few companies in the world, literally, that can do that. But yeah, it's probably cost prohibitive for most people.
Hurricane Central here, where I live in a little town called Orange, Texas, outside of Houston. And it's funny, I am familiar with the size of tree roots based on the trees I've seen that have just been upended. And the massive crater that some of those trees can leave is amazing. And that's when you really get to see. You get to see that real true expansion. And you're not getting to see it all because it's getting ripped up. So you're getting to see a lot more than what you would normally think. Like you're talking about that bulb.
And oftentimes people look at that and say, see, that tree fell over because it has a shallow root system. I'm like, no, all trees have shallow root systems. What happened outside of that? Maybe did we constrict the root system? Did we do damage to it in construction or even just foot traffic? Believe it or not, foot traffic, when you walk, the heel pressure of your foot is the equivalent of a pickup truck tire. It's about 25 PSI. So if you want to know why, when people walk in grass and you see the little bare path, it's not because they killed the grass. It's because they compacted the soil and roots can no longer grow in it. So just understanding the relationship. So when we're around soils, we refer to them as disturbed soils. When we disturb the soils around trees, that can be problematic. So if there's very little airspace for the roots and the root system isn't going to be healthy, it's not going to be really dynamic, and all of a sudden you get a big storm that comes. It's not necessarily because the storms are getting stronger. It's because we continue to do things to the root system that actually destabilize the tree or make it less healthy. And that's where people just make these assumptions about, oh, it's a bug, it's a disease, it's a climate. Yeah, but what's happened to this poor 100-year-old tree over the last century? And a lot of times we don't have a track record. We don't know. But people assume and make the wrong diagnosis oftentimes.
Oh my gosh. If you call John, you've got heavy foot traffic around your tree. Do not call him and tell him you think you have a bug problem. It has been clear on this podcast. He is going to, he's not going to be happy.
That's right. But you can cause a bug problem by compaction. The reason is because if you stress a tree, stress trees start to produce ethanol, and there are certain insects out there that are attracted to the ethanol. This is why a lot of the beetles in, you know, say the Rocky Mountain area and in the Rockies and the mountain areas, we see millions of trees dying. We've changed natural hydrology for these poor trees that have been there for sometimes hundreds of years, and then we wonder why the trees decline, and then they're stressed, and then they emit ethanol, and now you get the beetle infestations come after that. So we have a lot more to do with what's happening with the beetle infestation, the pine bark beetle and the mountain beetle and the spruce beetle. We have a lot more to do with that. A lot of people don't realize.
Wow. What I heard, though, is, we're out there treating the symptoms instead of the root cause. So the compaction was where it all started.
Oftentimes, compaction and hydrology.
Putting off that,
I was in Chicago last year, and they have an issue with oaks declining and dying. And they're like, what's going on here? Oaks are very susceptible to hydrologic change. You change the hydrologic profile on mature oaks, whether too little water, too much water, that causes decline. And then people are like, oh, the oaks are dying from a disease. I'm like, no, you're causing the problems here underground, and then you're seeing a symptom. Yeah, what happens above ground is generally a sign or a symptom.
Gotcha. John, it's been a pleasure. You caught me off guard on this one. I'm so happy that you reached out and came on the podcast.
Well,
I look forward to getting everybody to get to hear what you have to say. Look forward to seeing you. My wife and I will be at the Ohio Stormwater Show. So even if you don't get a chance to speak, you can just come walk it. I know a couple people in the stormwater world. I can introduce you to some folks if you'd like to meet up since you're there in Ohio.
I'm all for that, and I will be there. I think that's at Kalahari, is it not? I know the resort well.
Yeah, I just don't get me started, man. It's a good conference. Hey, everybody, great conference. I just think it's funny that it's at Kalahari, man. But it's a nice place. It's not a nice place. It's just funny to have it there. It's got an indoor swim park, and so you're at a conference. You got a bunch of kids running around. It shouldn't dissuade everybody to go because the conference is in a different section. But it just cracks me up. But hey, kudos to Harry and his team. Yeah. Man, they've done such a great job of keeping that price point down for everybody to be able to learn and gather information there on Ohio. It's such a great show.
I'm just disappointed that I didn't know about this until 2 weeks ago when I was talking to a guy. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. There's a stormwater conference in my own backyard. I was clueless.
Oh yeah.
I have a lot left to do.
I've done a lot of stormwater shows, and gosh, I couldn't even, I don't know, whatever, 200 probably. Yeah. If you figure 150 to 200, and it's consistent. The tracks are good. The price point for both attendees and exhibitors is good. The attendance is good. It's well run. It's one of the top shows in the country.
I'm proud. So it's on my calendar. I'll be there one way or the other. They can't keep me out.
I got you. All right, John, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate your time so much. Thank you for being on the pod.
I'm so glad. Listen, a week ago, I didn't know who you were, and all of a sudden, here I am. Things move quickly, but I'm glad to be of assistance, and I'm just a storyteller, so thanks for listening to the story.
Thank you so much.